Before we begin, everyone do me a favor. Thanks. Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers. Yeah. I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my faith to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency? Yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter. I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, January the 14th. My name's Christy Matthews.
And I'm Linda Kent.
We're broadcasting live from the KCNR studios here in Redding, California. You can find us on 96.5 FM and 1460 AM here in the local market. And I think you'll get a better listening stream at 96.5 FM. But if you happen to lose the connection, go to 1460 AM.
Yeah, it hasn't been doing that a lot lately, but you make a good point because some people forget just to switch over to AM and you can still get us.
Exactly. We live stream live at KCNR1460.com, and at that same website is where you will find the chat room. So if you'd like to chat with us, just it's all in one place. You can chat with us on X or on Telegram at Tokens Radio Show, and you can find a copy of today's show and previous shows right there at KCNR1460.com, and every show that has been recorded with us and any other show here at KCNR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am actually having an issue to opening the chat room today. I don't know if anybody else is. I didn't earlier, but I can't get it to open. So just maybe I got a refresh or something. But so anyway,
sometimes we just need to unplug, right?
That's what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
So just so in case, because I was looking to see if anybody was in there. So anyhow.
Yeah, Linda, that the SEC approved the long-awaited ETFs, right? I mean, it's like nobody knew that. Right.
Well, we went back and forth that yes, they did. No, they didn't. Yes, they did. Yeah. Well, they actually did.
Yes. And it was somewhat exciting. And so what's the difference between a Bitcoin and a BTF? A Bitcoin ETF. I almost said it. Another thing, right?
We need to break it down because when we were prepping for the show and stuff, there's pros and cons here. Depending on where you sit or what you're trying to accomplish or just having the knowledge.
Right.
Well, of how everything's working.
Exactly. And I just think with the ETFs now, it is furthering the adoption of Bitcoin, and it also furthers the need for education about Bitcoin and these investment vehicles called ETFs.
Right. And again, if you don't know, it's kind of like the stock market, and we'll get into it.
Sure.
You know, there is certain cash uses, if you want to say it that way, or certain things that you want to accomplish sometimes by using the stock market or buying stocks or different things, like ETFs or whatever, just like gold and silver. I mean, the whole financial piece.
Exactly. Well, we're going to do a market update, and then we're going to hear from a word from our sponsor. So currently, Bitcoin's sitting at $42,253, and it went up as high as $49,000 after the ETF came out, and then it's kind of worked its way down. But we're going to explain why. Ethereum's at $2,507, XRP is at $58, and XLM is at almost 12 cents.
Almost. Interesting market times. The Queen of Dragons sponsors today's show. This local establishment takes great pride in delivering top quality items at competitive prices. They ensure the safety and freshness of all of their offerings through rigorous testing. The Queen of Dragons has a diverse range of premium products freshly packaged daily. They're open 7 days a week from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Stay updated on their deals by following at Queen Dragons on X, or contact them at 530-276-9771.
Yeah, and if you'd like to join in on our conversation today, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at kcnr1460.com. And you know what? Forgot to say hello, Christina.
Oh, we did.
Yes.
Good afternoon.
So sorry about that.
Good afternoon, girls.
Yes.
How are you today?
Doing great. We just love Christina. She came in. You have 30 seconds, and it was right at 204.30. It's like we just love that.
I'm just trying to be control my time. I even took a webinar, like a master class of time management, and trying to organize myself because I feel like discipline is the best what we have can do with yourself.
That's right. It is a choice.
It's hard. It's really hard. Like, I never learned how to be disciplined, and I didn't have, like, a military family where, like, my family didn't help me with this. And my 30th to start. Oh, I wish I started faster.
I don't know many families that teach time management, basically. It's just I had to learn when I started my professional life.
Especially, like, Philippines, you know, in Asia families, they can, like, 30 minutes before, they're always, like, in time, and they're really
right.
Particular.
They're very strict.
Yes, yeah. And they, like, learn this, and this is a culture, you know. So it's not my culture, but I want to be inside of discipline. But thank you so much. I really love to be here with you guys.
You know, there is an old saying, if you're not 5 minutes early, you're 15 minutes late.
No, I never heard this, but I will know. Is this Philippines create this saying?
What's that?
The Philippines?
Yeah, I guess so.
I don't know.
They usually came like 30 minutes faster.
That's just something I heard growing up quite a bit. If you're not 5 minutes early, you're 15 minutes late.
But right? It's true. No. It's better to come faster and be prepared.
Absolutely.
Oh, I totally agree.
It's less stressful.
When I was in college, if I was going to be late for a lecture, I wouldn't go. I'd get notes from somebody. I hated to walk in late because the professor would say, "Oh, look, Linda decided to join us today," or something, make a big deal over it. So it's like, forget it. I just won't go.
Yeah. I totally agree. That's why, dear listeners, don't be late. Buy bitcoins, buy crypto.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that's a great transition because we are going to talk about Bitcoin and Bitcoin ETFs today. So it is not a time management discussion.
Learned me love to the crypto, and I kind of started like, learning more about this. I was really far away when I meet you, and now I'm kind of trying to learn about the crypto, trying to involve it in my life. It's hard. Also, like, a discipline and time management, but step by step, and I'll be there.
It's a discipline,
very nice,
and there is quite a learning curve.
I agree.
Yes.
And
we just applaud you for taking action and jumping in.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it never stops.
Me.
The learning never stops.
That's
because
right.
We are still constantly learning new things.
As the technology develops and it evolves, it's never-ending learning.
Well, yeah, this is something territory that we've never been in before,
right.
Either.
Yeah.
Nobody has.
That's true. Although it has happened before as we have changed monetary systems.
Correct.
Right. It just hasn't been in our immediate ancestry.
That's true.
Ancestry, I should say. Well, you know, our first bit of content today is titled Bitcoin Beyond Traditional Investments. So, you know, Bitcoin stands apart from conventional investment assets, obviously, like stocks and bonds. And unlike these, Bitcoin offers direct ownership.
It can.
It can, but Bitcoin does if you custody it.
Right, self-custody of it.
But
it doesn't have to be that way.
Well,
now.
Well, that's true, but if you even buy it through Coinbase, if you just buy Bitcoin, it is still yours.
Right.
Even though they're holding on to it. But we'll talk about the whole Coinbase thing later. But it's true. I mean, there is a difference between Bitcoin, the asset, and then Bitcoin, the ETF.
Correct.
Right, definitely.
Definitely a big difference. Each vehicle has its own pros and cons. Well, I'll back up. I don't know if there's any cons to holding Bitcoin.
Well, as we discuss further,
you
may just want to go that route.
So,
yeah. So, you know, you can hold it, transfer it, and spend it like you can with cash. And stock and bonds requires somebody in the middle, you know, for transactions, and they introduce fees and taxes, and it's a hassle to convert. Bitcoin allows for direct peer-to-peer transactions, eliminating these complexities.
You know, one of Michael Saylor's video I was listening to earlier was talking about this. And in it, he was saying, you know, it's the only system that we've had that's actually like money, because before, everything is credit. Right. When you stop and think about it in our world today and the way it operates, everything is credit.
Right. Even our dollar bill is a debt instrument.
Yeah, when you stop and think about it. And I thought that was quite interesting when he said that, because you don't necessarily think of it that way.
Right.
Until it's pointed out, and then you go, oh, yeah, it actually is.
Exactly. Well, and as investments go, Bitcoin is much more similar to a commodity like gold and other metals, grains and meat, crude oil and pork bellies, you know, and the like.
Mm-hmm. Bitcoin doesn't generate dividends or interest payments, but it can be sold for cash.
Exactly. So, you know, if you were into this Bitcoin staking thing, you know, that is a different thing. You have to basically surrender your Bitcoin and not have it in available to stake. But that's not what this is talking about.
Right. And that's kind of like a CD account. Kind of, sort of, is you're giving it up for a certain length of time.
Right.
Yeah. In order to...
To what end? It's going to be probably sold and returned in some sort of way. And although you'll still have your own Bitcoin, but it could actually be leverage. Let's put it that way. That's a better word to put it.
Yeah, leverage.
Yep.
Bitcoin has several major distinctions from commodities, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's digital.
Right. It's the first digital commodity to ever exist.
Which is kind of interesting, because, again, you know, we've in the past kind of compared like credit cards and stuff to it, but they're not really digital currency. It's a credit, not a currency.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then, you know, there are countless imitations and knockoffs. I think there's like 29,000 what you might call knockoffs. It's interesting because most cryptocurrencies start off with the same code that is Bitcoin. You can go right on GitHub and get a copy of the Bitcoin code and start your own cryptocurrencies, but Bitcoin is different.
Yeah.
Much
For one,
different.
It has more of a history.
Right. Integrity.
Integrity. Absolute scarcity.
Yeah.
User base.
It's liquid.
Or security of Bitcoin.
That's right.
Yeah. So it does have some characteristics that are a lot different than the others. Also, it's a limited supply, where a lot of your other ones aren't. Some are.
Right.
Some aren't. But that's one thing big about Bitcoin, is it is limited to the quantity that is going to be out there.
And there are some that are limited as well, but they're into the billions.
Oh, that's true, too.
Yeah. Second, unlike other commodities, the quantity of Bitcoin that exists, you were just talking about this, Linda, it's capped at a maximum supply, and that supply will never exceed 21 million Bitcoins, even 1,000 years from now. It's always going to be 21 million Bitcoins. It's never going to change because it's in the code.
Right.
Now, if there's some other iteration of Bitcoin, maybe like Bitcoin Cash or Dash or, I don't know, some of these other cryptocurrencies that are proof of work and based off of the Bitcoin.
ETH.
Well, Ethereum's now proof of stake, and who knows anything about that. I don't even know why we even mention it. But, you know, those could theoretically produce more than 21 million coins. But Bitcoin is 21 million. It's never going to change.
And that makes it a little bit different. You know, at the beginning of this, we said, you know, it's kind of like gold and silver commodities and things like that. But again, gold and silver, we don't know where that's going to be kept. We have no idea how much more is available to us.
Exactly. Yep.
Where, like you say, with Bitcoin, we know.
That's right.
21 million, 21 million, 21 million. That's it.
It's not going to change.
Yeah. Can't change. Won't go up, won't go down. That's it.
Yeah, and Bitcoin can act as a cash substitute, but it doesn't necessarily need to be sold for government-issued cash when you want to buy things with it. I think Christina had a really good example here not too long ago when you made a Bitcoin transaction. I think you had sent some Bitcoin home, right?
Yes, I was. But
very easy, wasn't it?
It was really easy because I was using the thing was with Bitcoin, it's really hard to transfer not with Bitcoin, with the dollars.
Right.
And American banks, it's really hard to transfer with Ukrainian banks.
Sure.
So we was kind of like just like putting the money through Apple Pay on the Bitcoin account. And the same way the person in Ukraine was taking the money out.
Yeah. Very simple. Peer-to-peer.
No. Just like click a face app and it's all.
So you just said exactly what we were saying here. You didn't need a government intermediary. You didn't need government cash, you know, to convert.
No, my husband created me an account while I was sleeping and he's like, hey, let's do it. I'm like, okay. We started. So we didn't need like kind of nothing for this. And it's really cool and really comfortable because before I was using Western Union and other stuff.
Oh. It's expensive, right?
Yeah, it was like... Yeah. $100 for a thousand.
Oh, yeah. So they're getting 10%.
Not only that, but with Western Union, unless it's changed, you IRS. Have to be able to get to a location on the other end.
Yes, and also this, like, all the percentage of money what you came in, you have to, after to put in your tax report, as I know. You have to, like, collect the checks.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I mean, like, with the Bitcoin, you don't have to do it, as I know.
Not only that, Western Union.
I'm sorry, maybe I'm not like really good in this point.
No, that's okay.
You're saying a lot of things that we've already talked about is that this is why in countries outside of the United States that people find that Bitcoin, they call it freedom. They call it, you know, where it's whole for them. In other words,
also they don't freeze money because, like, Ukrainian banks freeze money. So, for example, a dollar card in Ukraine. We have like our currency cards and like a dollar card. So we're trying to use this card here, and usually it holds for the purchase like for a few days before they request a bank from Ukraine to like start using this money. But if he'll just like immediately put this card in a Bitcoin account, he can use this money.
Right.
Right. And that's the other thing with like Western Union and stuff. Right. Is you have to also be there at the location and hours. It's not like you can do it at any time of the day. You have to be within their hours to get to collect your money.
And you might have to travel some distance to get to that Western Union.
And sometimes
Union
they don't
office.
Have money there.
So there's a lot of things.
More than $2,000, you have to call them before and check if they have money.
Yep. So we're pretty fortunate here. But this is the reality of what's going on in other countries outside of the United States.
Oh, about Bitcoin and currency story. So I was traveling in Mexico, and Americans able to there's only like one bank of Aztec bank in Mexico where you can change money like, officially with like a normal price. So Americans are able to change only 2,000 per month. Other money you're not able, they won't change you like because the law you have to be able to do it in the black
Phone's ringing.
The phone call.
Yeah, so hopefully a call for us. So
that's interesting, though, but that's the type of thing you don't always think about. I mean, we talk about it for the most part, but for somebody that's actually utilizing it, going across, like to Ukraine or whatever, the difference it can make, or Mexico or wherever, we just assume. Because we have a lot of freedoms here to actually transact more than in a lot of places.
It'd be interesting that maybe we wouldn't have all of the crazy regulations and stuff that we tolerate and accept because we are such a free country that we think we're free.
Right.
Because we have all of these availabilities, if you will. But outside of our country as...
Excuse me?
Yes.
I interrupt.
Okay. So not a call for us.
No.
Okay.
Unfortunately, not for us. But the story is, my husband was traveling together, and we were trying to change the money, and Ukraine was not in the system, so he was not able to change the money at all.
Oh, my goodness.
And only the black, you know, spot, like, I mean, not black spot, I mean, like, dark markets, or how they
right.
call, with the lowest exchange, you can have money.
Hmm.
But if we will know all the situation, even Bitcoin 2 years ago, we'll be more safe.
Right.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Because it was so stressed to be travel and, like, all these questions with currency exchanges and over the world.
Yeah. So all I have to say is El Salvador, Ecuador, you know, other countries, Latin American countries favor Bitcoin. Venezuela, this is how people are surviving in Venezuela.
And back to traveling and stuff, one thing about it, with Bitcoin, it's, you know, back in the day, it used to be traveler's checks
right.
instead of cash. Remember that?
Right.
And then sometimes it was hard to even use your traveler's checks.
Right.
But yeah. Bitcoin is so much easier.
Yes.
You don't
definitely.
Have to worry about, you know, storing it in your pockets or your purse or losing
right.
it or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, a little bit different. Or worried. Who would have thought that you go someplace and you can't exchange whatever banking currency you have and you get in another country like Christina's saying, and then you're, what,
yeah.
stuck?
Well, you're going to love this. I mean, it's impractical to take custody of actual commodities,
that.
You know, like large amounts of gold or pork bellies
right,
or barrels
yeah.
of oil, right?
Yeah.
Bitcoin
what are you
going
to do, you know?
Yeah, you're
going to. Bring your little wheelbarrow or your, you know.
Your forklift,
yeah,
right?
Your forklift.
You know, or have a container ship, you know? But this way, you can actually, you know, you can... I just lost my page. But in any case.
Yeah, you can have it. It's real easy to have it in your custody.
Exactly. That's the whole point about
it.
Right.
Nice. And, do you have to a certain degree? Yeah, I guess if you lost your phone. But you don't have to carry all your Bitcoin on your phone.
Well, and all you really need to know is if you have your wallet address memorized and your seed phrases, you can recover a wallet anytime,
That's
any place.
True.
Right. So it's really easy to custody for yourself.
So that's Bitcoin
and
self-custody and physical.
Right.
Bitcoin.
So let's talk a little bit about ETFs.
Which is?
Yeah. They're investment instruments.
They are.
And
go ahead.
Yeah. So there is a difference between ETFs and direct Bitcoin ownership. And we have 7 points. So
yeah. What, the first one, you're not directly holding the Bitcoin.
If with an ETF.
With an ETF. Yeah, I almost
right.
said it backwards. Yeah. It's actually you're buying it and somebody else is holding it. It's kind of like stocks.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's pretty much the same thing as the stock market, except it's a Bitcoin stock.
Well, and they sell shares.
Right.
In fact, an ETF is an exchange traded fund. Okay, and they're funds that were started by Vanguard, BlackRock, Grayscale, ARK20, ARK Investment. Fidelity, I believe, does not have one. There are 15 that were allowed. But so each and every one of them has their own funds, and they sell them for a share price. And you can mm-hmm. buy a unit for dollars.
Mm-hmm. Number two, ETFs charge management fees.
Right. You don't get a management fee with Bitcoin.
Nope. And that's pretty self-explanatory. You got to pay the middleman. ETFs can only be bought and sold during stock exchange hours.
It's like what Christina was saying. You know, mm-hmm. you got to try to get your dollars exchanged. And on the other hand, Bitcoin exchanges are often available 24/7, 365.
ETFs have a greater restriction than real Bitcoin when realizing losses for tax purposes.
Yep. Bitcoin ETFs are subject to tax rules that don't allow losses to be declared unless you remain out of the market for 30 days. But Bitcoin requires
no wait.
You can exchange and tax loss harvesting instantly and without being out of the market.
5. ETFs are subject to the same tax rules as stocks and bonds. If you want to access the purchasing power of ETF units, you must sell them, thereby converting them into U.S. dollars. Mm.
Bitcoin is, however, subject to the same tax rules as property. It's IRS 2014-21 in the United States and is considered a commodity like gold, oil, or corn. And it looks like we're going to be going to a break.
And when we come back, we'll pick up this conversation. You are listening to Tokens Radio Show. We'll see you in about 5.
Dragon's Dispensary, your ultimate destination for top-notch cannabis experiences. Conveniently located at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard, Shasta Lake, our locally owned and operated dispensary takes pride in providing you with the best in price, value, and safety. Rest easy knowing that all of our products are rigorously tested for your peace of mind. We champion medical freedom, empowering you to choose what's right for you. Unbelievable value for unbeatable quality. For exclusive deals and exciting updates, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at The Queen Dragons or visit www.queenofdragons.com. The Queen of Dragons Dispensary, where the fire of quality meets the freedom of choice. Backed by popular demand, fresh and local flower powered by Pinnacle, Shasta County's premier local cultivator. Package fresh and daily with a wide variety and best prices and deals in town. And they can package larger sizes and quantities on site. Available only at the Queen of Dragons Dispensary. Winter hours are Monday through Sunday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and they deliver. 530-276-9771.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Fire and Destruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Welcome to this week's Town Hall News Brief. I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, here with the latest local updates. First up, the Shasta County Board of Supervisors voted 3-2 this week to suspend the development impact fees that fund infrastructure projects. Since 2008, these fees have helped build facilities like a juvenile center, fire station, and emergency operations center. Without this revenue, these projects would be funded by the county's general fund. The ordinance suspending impact fees will return to the board on January 23rd. If enacted, then they would take effect 30 days later. A full summary and 5-year report regarding development impact fees, accounts, and planned future uses is available online. Next up, Shasta County Sheriff Michael Johnson is making headlines on two fronts. He is opposing California's contested concealed carry law currently blocked by the appeals court as unconstitutional, ramping up tensions as the disputed legislation faces an uncertain fate. At the same time, Johnson delivered on his promise to reopen a previously closed floor at the Shasta County Jail by Thanksgiving, almost reaching full capacity and taking more criminals off the streets. However, just before the opening, lightning knocked out the surveillance systems, but quick work by the tech team had systems operating in time for the planned reopening. With the jail almost at capacity again, holding lower-level offenders and freeing up deputies, Johnson hopes new personnel performing background checks will further improve operations as the department renews its focus. Meanwhile, the Dunamis Wellness Center, a Reading and Chico counseling provider, abruptly ceased operations in December, leaving patients blindsided. Clients reported showing up for locked doors and last-minute cancellation notices. Patients felt abandoned, saying the sudden shutdown without notice violated ethical standards and patient trust. Though Dunamis offered record access, requests went unanswered, frustrating clients now scrambling for care. The owner has not commented to the media. Next up, our last brief.
For the first time, Shasta County's at-home committee met to address homelessness. This oversight team consists of local leaders aiming to improve coordination. Reading Mayor Tanessa Audette says the collaboration is a work in progress as they establish structure. She stresses communication to consolidate information and funding. The first outcome will be a multi-million-dollar day resource center next to the Good News Rescue Mission. While details develop, the team spirit seems strong. The committee has scheduled their next three monthly meetings on February 15th, March 21st, and April 18th. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shasta Lake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
And we're back. And if you're wondering about the music comes from The Sting.
Ah, okay.
ETFs?
Yes.
The Sting.
Got it.
Yes, so we had the Entertain. I think it's Entertainment, and I forget what the second one's title is, but it's from the movie The Sting.
Love it.
So, a little bit different choice of music. Yeah, I know people are probably going, what the hell? So, anyway, before we went to break, we were talking about ETFs, and we had one more to go,
right?
With ETFs, you must rely on honesty, excuse me, and competence of the middleman that stand between you and the actual Bitcoin. So you have to have confidence and feel good about who your middleman is.
That is so huge, and why we didn't skip over and just go into the next topic, because there are middlemen involved with the ETF. You don't get the ETF without the middleman.
Right.
Period. End of story. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and you have to really watch it. I mean, excuse me, we have to watch it with the bank. They're kind of the middleman for us, you know,
right,
to a certain degree. And we all have those that we – I'll just put it out there. One is Wells Fargo. Some of us don't like Wells Fargo.
No.
Yeah, it just is, okay? So I would never let Wells Fargo be my middleman, quote, unquote.
Right, right. As
know.
Well as a few other, oh,
well,
the
yeah,
other big
names.
Yeah,
there's
some other
ones, but yeah. They come to mind really easy. So anyway, that yeah. kind of goes over the ETFs, the pros and cons, and
right.
what it means, and
so
hopefully
now,
that
yeah. So now we'll have the opinion part of it, and, you know, at the beginning of last year, we were talking about is Bitcoin not crypto, as we all had learned, you know, the Chetta lessons and stuff like that,
right.
The rug pulls. So we were Bitcoin not crypto. And now this is evolving. It's Bitcoin not ETFs.
Yeah.
And we've got a few examples here, and Preston Pish, who is an expert in this area, we'll have a small clip from him, but just a few little tidbits from the video that he and Sam Callahan had done through Swan Bitcoin. And basically what they're saying is that individuals should focus on owning and holding their mm-hmm. own Bitcoin to resist centralization and avoid the potential risks of Bitcoin ETFs, very much like what we had just discussed in the first half of the show.
Right. Bitcoin not ETFs is important for educating people about Bitcoin and encourage them to buy and hold their own Bitcoin to resist centralization and to avoid the fate of gold.
Right. And realize that Wall Street is trying to profit off of these ETFs. So You don't have to deal with that if you just go directly for the actual Bitcoin itself.
Yeah, because remember back in the beginning, they wanted nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah, they finally joined us.
Yeah, it was like bad, bad scheme, money laundering. You know, all the bad things is what Bitcoin does when that's not true. And so now they want to be part of it and try to make some money in between.
Exactly. Now, institutional investors may find ETFs beneficial. you know, they're handling large accounts, and so that might be beneficial for them. But for people like you and I, individual investors should consider owning spot BTC Bitcoin instead of paper Bitcoin through an ETF.
Right. The risk of centralization, Bitcoin and ETFs stored at institutional custody service is high, but self-custody carries zero risk.
That's right.
The only risk you have at self-custody level is if you do something...
Your crypto hygiene.
Yeah, you have no crypto hygiene. You do something really stupid.
Right, exactly. Okay. You know, here's this is a reality. I think we're going to live through this ourselves. A Bitcoin could potentially disrupt government's financial systems, leading to the possibility of them trying to offset their own expenditures by taking and replacing Bitcoin with freshly printed fiat currency. I mean, we're at, what, $34 trillion
something
in debt?
Like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, at some point in time, the government may look at this and see the billions, and will probably be trillions that will be moving into the ETF market. It would be tantalizing for the government to look at that.
Mm-hmm. I agree, yeah. People are buying Bitcoin without understanding its power,
right,
which could lead to problems in the future. Yeah, sometimes, what is that saying? I know enough to be dangerous.
Oh, yes, exactly.
You know, that kind of can hold true there.
Oh, definitely.
That's why we're doing what we're doing. And there's a lot of people out there that are trying to educate people. That's all we're trying to do. We're not in it to try to make money or to scam somebody or whatever.
Right.
It's just to educate you to this system and the future of what it can bring, or
exactly,
will bring, I should say.
So we have a clip here. It's about 2 minutes and 15 seconds about what Preston Pysh has to say.
All right.
We're going to go play that right now. And it's about changing the money supply and potentially disrupting governments. So here we go.
Why is nobody talking about how every single, not every single, there's Fidelity that's not, and I think BitGo or whatever is not as well. But for everybody else, they are using Coinbase as their custodian for all these Bitcoin that are going to be purchased on behalf of all these people that are owning the shares of these ETFs. I just, you know, at the end of the day, the market's going to do what it does. Me just complaining about it hopefully brings awareness and business opportunity for others to become custodians of these ETFs, so that it's more spread out and there's not such a large honeypot. That's the only reason I tweeted it out and wanted to raise awareness. It's not that I'm anti-ETF or anti-this. I just think that there's way better ways that are less risky for individuals to take ownership of their money. And that's the point that I'm trying to make in the face of all of this. When you look at history and you look at when currencies change over, these types of things can get really nasty, where the government has to somehow figure out a way to fund itself. Obviously, these people running these governments don't want to cut spending by 50% to 80% because there's a new currency in town, and nobody knows the pace at which this is going to take place. Could this be 15, 20 years? Sure. Could it be 5 years? Sure. Do I know? You better believe I don't know. But what I do have is an appreciation for, if this happens quickly and things get, what's the word I'm looking for? Disruptive or non-linear, the governments are going to have to do something to offset all of these expenditures that they have laid out. So what becomes an option at that point? Well, where's the biggest pot of Bitcoin that I can find so that I can take it and shove and make good for all the people that actually own those Bitcoin? I can shove a bunch of this freshly printed fiat into their hands to offset the fact that I'm stealing all this Bitcoin from them, which they'll be happy for 10 days, and all of a sudden they'll figure out what happened and they'll be furious.
Yeah, I mean, that's huge, and it's a distinct possibility, and that's exactly what would happen. Mm-hmm. Is that there will be an offering. It's like, hey, we would like to buy your Bitcoin from you, and you might say, yeah, you know, they're going to give me a pile of cash, but your cash is worthless.
Yep.
So,
yeah, And that's not unheard of. I mean, we haven't done that with Bitcoin, but we've seen it with other things in the system, the way the government operates with that.
Exactly. You know, in this next piece that we're going to talk about, Michael Saylor and his just infinite wisdom, you know, as he evolves with this, class of 2020, just like you and I are, as he evolves and understands the technology, he gets more and more eloquent with how to talk about it in a language that everyday folk understand.
Mm-hmm. That's
for
true.
A while, it took it. There was a lot of technological talk and having to understand his cerebral capabilities, right? But he has just gotten so good about this. And this next piece is Michael Saylor with Stefan Levera, and where he breaks down Bitcoin is a set of three integrated protocols and four types of scarcity. And it's really cool how he talks about this, and we'll go ahead and just go into that, and we'll have a clip with Michael Saylor wrapping it all up.
So in this clip, you know, Bitcoin protocol allows for personal interpretation and consensus, provide a rational economic foundation for humanity.
Right.
Bitcoin is an asset circulating on a network governed by a protocol providing a rational economic foundation for humanity.
Right. Now, Bitcoin has three core protocols. It's the monetary protocol, transaction, and power. Now, with the power protocol focuses on real-time security over the network. And all three devices need to share these protocols to be part of the network.
Which we have talked about many times before. Right. That they all have to talk to one another, basically, and agree upon it.
Right.
And that's a big deal.
So he goes on to say, do you want to take this one?
Bitcoin's fixed supply of 21 million and resistance to changes in monetary policy make it rational and long-term economic frameworks for the human race.
Now, if you were to listen to the video, he'll talk about 1,000 years out. This isn't just, you know, a couple hundred years. He's forecasting 1,000 years. Look how long gold has been a standard.
Oh.
5,000 years.
Easy, yeah.
So it's not impractical here. And also he does mention, where the miners are going to be earning most of their revenues is going to be in transaction fees, probably within the next few years, but it's going to take another 100 years before the last coin is actually minted. But, you know, with the halving that's coming up, the block rewards are going to be so minimal at that point. So with Bitcoin's fixed supply of 21 million and resistance to changes in monetary policy, make it a rational and long-term economic framework for the human race.
Bitcoin's protocol has a cap of 21 million Bitcoin in 4 megabyte blocks every 10 minutes, with bandwidth scarcity and adjustments made over the last 15 years.
Yeah, there's been several of them. We've talked about them before. Mm-hmm. Now, the Bitcoin protocol is based on computing power, specifically the SHA-256 hashing algorithm, which determines who gets to create a block every 10 minutes. And we talked about the difficulties and how within the code it will adjust the difficulty up or down. And it's based on the SHA-256 hashing algorithm.
Bitcoin mining equipment creates scarce power through SHA-256 hashing, which along with bandwidth, power, and technology scarcity ensures integrity and efficiency of the network.
Now, Jason Lowry talked quite a bit about this because of his thesis software. It's a power force multiplier.
Right.
Power projection. And from a military standpoint, this is what it's all about. The more use of energy, controlling the hashing is what brings military dominance, country stability, all of that. So
right.
It is pretty cool. The Bitcoin protocol is a market-driven system where transactions are protected and implemented based on the subjective value of participants, with miners being paid by transaction fees. And subjective value is basically Austrian economics, which is pure economy.
Yep. Block rewards will decrease over time, with transaction revenues becoming more important, and Bitcoin miners act as defenders of the network by investing in infrastructure and advocating for a pro-Bitcoin policy.
Now, that's a huge statement, because we just talked briefly about how the block rewards, you know, Satoshi front-ended that so that those taking a risk in mining Bitcoin and supporting the network were rewarded handsomely in the beginning.
Right.
Okay. But as this network is 15 years old, it has adoption is definitely left the station a long time ago,
right,
and it's doing really well. So it's time for that transition to occur, to where this is the support and maintenance of the network. And how that's done is that the miners are paid a transaction fee rather than these huge block rewards.
Right.
And it's to their advantage to defend that. So we've got a cut here by Michael Saylor.
Let's go ahead and play it. The name of it is Set of Integrity Protocols.
Integrated. Yeah.
Integrated.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
And Integrity, too. So here we go. 2 minutes and 30 seconds.
I look at the entire network, and I think it's a pretty beautiful set of integrated protocols, because the Power Protocol protects the transactions every 10 minutes. And the transactional protocol is a market-driven protocol where people are bidding to put their transactions into the block space. So as the ecosystem grows, the bid for transactions grows in a classic market economy fashion. And what you have is Austrian economics dictating which transactions will get implemented based upon subjective value of all the participants in the ecosystem. The miners, over the course of 1,000 years, it's quite obvious, right? The miners are paid by transaction fees. The block rewards were a bootstrap or an initial subsidy in the first 20 years of the network. But as far as I can see, by the year 2035, the block rewards just look de minimis. 1% of all the Bitcoin comes out over 100 years after that. So block rewards don't really matter. They fall away over the long time toward infinity. What matters is transaction revenues. And over time, I think we can expect the transaction revenues will grow to far outstrip the block rewards. And then if you look at Bitcoin miners, they're really Bitcoin power producers or digital power centers that are defending the network. They're the first line of defense in the network, in the sense that anybody that wants to hack or interrupt the blocks in the next 10 minutes, they have to get through that hash wall. They're also the second line of defense of the network, because the Bitcoin miners all have invested millions or tens of millions or 100 millions or billions of capital that they can't recoup in less than 4 to 8 years, and perhaps longer in some cases. Because they have to recoup their capital investment, they form corporate entities in every single nation state and every jurisdiction, and then they become active, engaged lobbyists for pro-Bitcoin policies everywhere on Earth where they operate. So you really could think of the Bitcoin miners, you know, kind of as all of the citadels on the wall that are defending what is Bitcoin, and they are in essence the defense arm of Bitcoin.
I completely agree with it. It is the miners. They defend the network. There are thousands and thousands of nodes out there that support the network. So we want to support the miners, to the point to where we're going to be bringing this back up again about talking about it in our own local governments.
Yep.
It's important that we go there.
It's very important, because as we talked before about the miners and the situation, and we'll elaborate more on
right.
it, what it can do for your community. We
right.
have seen some of the evidence of other cities
right.
putting it into play and what it's done for them.
It becomes a great second option for them outside of taxes and grants.
And it also can help them for unplug from, you know, their government and take back their communities.
Exactly. Yep. So let's say you really an ETF. What if your investment company you're working with says, no, not for you? Well, guess what? It is already happening. Do you remember when we talked about the choke points?
Yes.
Choke point one, choke point two. You know, the original one was, it was an Obama-driven initiative where the DOJ, I mean, this is going back, what, 11 years or so, that investigated U.S. banks who did business with firearm dealers and payday lenders and other sketchy, let's say, I don't know.
Excuse me, players.
Yeah.
People that weren't all up and up.
Yeah,
you know?
So they had different lines of work, let's put it this way.
And they wanted to be in charge of things. So
right. So they just cut off their funding. And then we had Choke Point 2.0 just a couple years ago during the pandemic. Same manner, the banks began terminating relationships with any company who was red-listed due to a cryptocurrency transactions or activity.
Right.
Look at the truckers. I mean, there were so many that if it was questionable and it involved cryptocurrency, they were able to cut you off.
Right. If they didn't like your relationship with somebody, they just say, you know what? No more.
Right.
So this could happen, or it is already happening with ETFs.
So now we're on to Choke Point 3.0, and Linda's still getting over
excuse
a cold
me,
there.
I'm choking. Yeah, excuse me.
So now with the Bitcoin ETFs available, now there are hundreds of trillions of dollars that otherwise had not had access to Bitcoin can now jump into the asset class and begin allocating accordingly.
But only if they allow them.
Well, here's the big problem. One problem. Well, a number.
Well, yeah, I was going to say there's more than one that's going on here. But one of the major problems is,
well, their large and important brokerage firms have blocked the on-ramps. So Vanguard, being the worst and loudest offender, issued a statement, and I'll say, quote, spot Bitcoin ETFs will not be available for purchase on the Vanguard platform. Our perspective is that these products do not align with our offer focused on asset classes such as equities, bonds, and cash, which Vanguard views as the building blocks of a well-balanced long-term investment portfolio. But that's strange considering their mission statement says, our core purpose is simple, to take a stand for all investors, to treat them fairly, and to give them the best chance for investment success.
Now, which is it?
Right.
Am I, like, not getting this or what?
Well,
you're saying one thing on one hand and another on another hand.
It's the cashew thing.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
Our little joke between us about cashews.
You had too many cashews.
So, and they're also a top holder of MicroStrategy, who, you know, our greatest cheerleader for Bitcoin is Michael Saylor's company there. So, and then Merrill Lynch, owned by Bank of America, is not allowing customers to buy their spot ETFs.
How come that doesn't surprise me none? I mean, Bank of America?
UBS is only offering Bitcoin ETFs to eligible wealth management clients, according to the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah,
so that means people like you and me and Christina, we don't know enough to go ahead and buy Bitcoin, but yet we're doing it all the time.
Yeah. And Citigroup only provides Bitcoin ETF access for institutional clients. But it says it's exploring options for high net worth individuals. Exactly their definition of high net worth individuals, we don't know yet.
So the bottom line, buy your own, custody your own, and you should be good to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you have ETFs in your portfolio, because that's what your investment advisor has as far as a bucket of investments, just know that you don't own the Bitcoin. You own the shares and the interest in the Bitcoin. The company that has sold that ETF to you has the Bitcoin. And it's probably sitting with Coinbase.
Probably. That's probably going to be the main one. And with that, I think we're pretty much to the end of the show.
Okay.
Hopefully you learned something new in this and understand ETFs a little bit more, the difference between ETFs and Bitcoin.
We'll see you next week.
All right, next time. Take care.
And there's plenty of room for all. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto.